Hi, this is Jeff Seymour, and welcome to the podcast. Today, I'm going to talk about this idea of whether or not the actor should do something special in the audition so they stand out. I'm also going to answer a question about how the real-life actor approach applies to musical theater. I'll explain. One of my former students in Australia, a fellow named David, asked me this question via email. I thought it would be a good one for the podcast. He asks the question of whether or not you approach the audition differently than you do working on the set. And an idea that was suggested to him that you want to do something special, you know, if you can, so as to make sure that the casting people remember you out of the 12 or 20 people that may come in, I suppose. And that in that sense, I guess what he's suggesting is perhaps that's where it's different. That, you know, you're looking for something extra to do with the express purpose of kind of ensuring that the casting people are going to remember who you are. That's a fair question, right? And on its face, it would seem to make sense, I guess, right? You know, they're going to have 12 people in, 20 people in. Everyone's going to be dressed in jeans and work boots and various types of shirts, but they're all coming in at a, you know, maybe the generally the same size, generally the same age, and so you want to stand out. It seems reasonable. Do we add something? Do we do something special? Here's the problem with that, David. Like what? You see? Like what? Because as soon as you start saying things like, well, I need to do something special, okay, but based on needing to do something special? Because, you know, that may come off kind of phony and contrived. Because if it doesn't organically come out of the communication you're having, hopefully you're really hooking up and you're doing some really authentic work. If you add something that is there for the sake of being special, you run the risk of it being a trick, a gag. You know, a little bit of icing you threw on there just so everyone would remember you. And, you know, for myself, watching auditions, if I feel somebody has added something just for the sake of getting me to remember some kind of clever something that stands out as kind of a, not a bit maybe, but like a move on the actor's part, I don't know. You know, if that comes on top of doing a completely brilliant job acting and you look absolutely perfect for the part, then maybe that's just a little fun smiley moment. But otherwise, you run the risk of adding something. And so then what? You're like looking around thinking, what can I do different? What can I do differently? What can I do? I can, maybe I'll have, maybe, you know, I don't want to chew gum. That's, everyone's going to do that with this role. Maybe I'll have a little something I fumble with in my hand. Maybe I have a little, you have a silver dollar. No, that's, you know. And so you're spending time trying to come up so that you can be the guy with the silver dollar that flipped it between his fingers. Oh, again, if it comes out organically, authentically, like you're one of these guys that I imagined always had silver dollars around him because of his business. Maybe he's a coin collector and he's also a gambler. And, you know, you have this incredible mannerism where you flip them between your fingers over your knuckles. I guess, but you know, if you don't look right and you're not a brilliant actor, that little flippery is not going to do anything extra. So then what do we do extra? Well, look, here's what I'm struck by. Here's what I think actors need to pay attention to. I do a lot of coaching for people auditioning. And generally what I see first, and it runs the risk of being taken right into the audition room, and that is an actor who has dutifully memorized their lines and they have everything down. And then they come in and it's fine. I mean, it looks at first glance realistic. It feels realistic. You know, they didn't make any mistakes. But there's nothing exciting there. There's just nothing at all exciting there. Why? I think primarily because the actor, without realizing it, is focusing on just being cool and being normal and being regular and just talking and being real and just keeping everything real, man. And what ends up happening is it just kind of pulls the effervescence down because it ends up being this safe, just be straight, just talk, kind of void of anything, well, special. But you know where that special is. That special is in like everyone I ever talked to that's ever talking to me about anything. I mean, you know, there is a snap, crackle, pop that occurs when people are really on what they're talking about. That is undermined by the actor who, in wanting to just keep it real and between the lines, let's just keep the sucker between the lines, let's keep it on the tracks, may modulate, may go up, may allow themselves a little bit of anger, but people are way more expressive in real life. I've said this about actors. You know, I find them to be fascinating, fun storytellers. They're great, man. They really know everything, timing and how to tell a story and where the, you know, what the point of it is. And they take you right along and it's usually hilarity ensues. And then you take that same person and put them up on a stage and it's like their whole snap crackle has been neutered. It's subdued. And it's because the actor doesn't want to make a mistake and they wanted to just keep it together, man. Let's just keep this thing on the center of the road. Let's go. I think the thing that you do special really has to come from something authentic in the script that you connect with that allows you to hopefully at least be as entertaining, as interesting, as convincing, as magnetic as you are in real life. I can't emphasize this enough. You know, when actors come in, they do a great job, but it's like they leave and I still have no idea who they really are. You know, I couldn't tell you. Yet I can read people fairly well. But when people act, it tends to have this feeling of reality and it seems authentic and this and that, but you don't have the same window into the soul that you do when someone in real life is telling you that same story. My goodness, by the end of it, you know, you say to yourself, boy, I've kind of got a good idea of who this person is. You listen to that person in real life tell you their story of woe or their tragic event or that ironic thing that occurred that ended up breaking up their marriage. And first of all, it's for me, far more riveting than what I generally see when people act it for obvious reasons. But in real life, the person telling the story has no other obligation but to communicate their feelings, their thoughts, the nuance, the irony, the moral of the story for all the right reasons. And it's the actor who unwittingly, in trying to hit all the right notes and modulate properly, end up having more soulless work. And so as these people pass through the office and come in and audition for us, we kind of just get essentially kind of a one beige actor after another beige actor. I don't want to make fun of beige because, you know, there are good beiges out there. But that kind of just nothing in particular. So we think we need to do something fancy. Maybe we carry one of those butterfly knives, you know, they do in the movies all the time where the person goes and they just make it go around and around. And I think, is that even possible? Maybe you do that. And of course, I'm joking because if you could actually be someone who could take an audition and do the audition and really be so present that the thing that you're talking about and the deal that you're dealing with is as real as anything. Oh, I guarantee you'd stand out. You absolutely would stand out. I mean, incredibly so. Because if a person that actually this was happening to sat down in front of us and started going through the thing, we'd be mesmerized. Because usually, look, when you go in for scenes, there's something up, right? you know, there's something going on. So, you know, people tell us mild stories in life about a little mishap at Walmart, and we're fascinated. I'm sure if you're going to talk about how you were stalked or whatever incredible thing that, you know, most scenes are about, if you actually spoke in the first person and put your focus on really communicating a real story, and at least with the same snap, crackle, pop that you do in your everyday life, oh, you'd stand out, certainly. Well, let me put it this way. There would be nothing about your performance that would dissuade us from hiring you. It would then be about your flavor, your size, how you match up, and, you know, and all those other things. But you would definitely be playing your best card doing that, what I just described. So in answer to your question, David, I think that we have to focus on what is authentically going on in the scene and continue to make the stuff so personal, so first person. We are so good at just listening to this other person's story, making it our own, and then arguing it in the first person, towing the line and giving the reader in that audition the business like this stuff's happening, to the point that when you walk out, you know, they think, did he say all the lines? You know, like they hear things they've never heard. They feel different. In fact, you know, sometimes the readers get thrown off. Because even though they've heard the same lines all day, it's said with such an authenticity that they stare at you for a second. Like, you know, like they think you've come out of the scene and you're actually addressing them personally. I mean, these kinds of things happen when people do that. So if you're going to do something special, well, make it special by being the one that walks in the room and we think, my goodness, you are the authentic person. Now, having said that, let me say this. There are things that you don't do, not add, but take away, that could actually get their attention, and actually will get their attention. I've mentioned it before in podcasts, but it's this idea of following the stage directions and or dressing exactly the way it's stated. Now, I have to be clear here because I've had some listeners say, well, look, if they tell you to wear a black t-shirt, you know, and you don't, then they give you a hard time. Okay, there's a difference between the casting director saying, please wear a black t-shirt, and it being written in the script. He wears a black t-shirt. One is a direct order. Yeah, you might as well follow it, unless you don't have a black t-shirt, then I guess you should borrow one. But the other is the writer's suggestion. And if you follow that too closely, you'll end up looking like a lemming. And you'll sit in that outer office with a bunch of other people in black t-shirts, mindlessly, you know, putting on the thing they saw in the script, and everyone looks the same. And here's one way you could stand out. But more specifically, and, you know, if it says, he wears, and this is in the script, he wears a pinstripe suit with a red handkerchief sticking in his pocket, you know. These kinds of things, when you follow them too closely, it makes the actor look a little mindless and like you've got either an unlimited wardrobe or you went out and got this, and that can look a little desperate. But the worst part is you'll end up sitting in the outer office with a bunch of other people that look just like you. But more specifically, what I want to address is the idea of just this little bit of direction that the writer throws in there. You know, he laughs menacingly. He coughs. He stifles a cough. He looks sideways at the person beside him. He looks off and then down at his feet quickly and then off to the side. Something's up with this fellow, you know. These kinds of direction that really, you know, they're not going to have any real bearing on your performance. When I'm coaching actors, I tell them specifically to stay away from these little bits. And a couple that I've mentioned, I think I know there was one where a woman was doing a scene and it said that she's skeet shooting. And then at the end of the scene, she's supposed to rack the shotgun, you know. I told her, don't rack the shotgun. Please don't rack the shotgun. You don't have a shotgun in your hand. It's just going to look dumb. And, it, you know, I'm not going to not hire you because, oh, well, I don't know if she knows how to rack a shotgun. I mean, she should have mimed it. I mean, if she could have mimed it, at least we'd know. Now what do we do? You know, no one thinks this way. And sure enough, when she was finished and didn't rack the shotgun, the auditioner said, "Thank you so much for not racking the shotgun." Just the other day, I coached someone, and there was a line where the fellow gets very, very upset. And the playwright had written in, or the writer had written in, you know, this thing, a growl that, you know, he's trying to spell. Yeah, I mean, how do you spell? You know, how do you spell that? But he tried. And so, to the actor, I said, "Don't do that. Just, you know, I don't know why there's a growl here anyway. And again, you're not going to not be hired because, well, the guy didn't growl. I mean, can he growl? What if he can't growl? Then we get him on the set. We say growl. He goes, and he can't growl. You know. And sure enough, when he was finished, the casting director said, "Hey, thank you for not doing that growl." So, David, perhaps the best way for you to stand out by doing something different, look at the direction and decide, is that really going to change the performance? Even if it says, "He looks guilty." All right, I don't know. You know, a lot of times when writers write, they're not necessarily brilliant actors or brilliant directors. And the first thing that the made actor or the smart director will do is say, no, I don't need to know that you're guilty. I don't want to see that. This sometimes is just written in by the writer so that, you know, we can have a heads up as to what is actually going on or something, but you would never do it in practical application. So start to look at these things and get out of the world of bad make-believe and say, you know, what would really be happening here? I wouldn't want to look guilty. These people would know I was guilty. The cops would look at me and say, "Hey, you look guilty." So don't worry about those things. Lines and situation dictate character. Put yourself there. And so the bit of advice is to stand out. Just don't do what everyone else is going to be doing with regard to costumes, mannerisms, and those little teeny things they throw in, you know, and they tell you to do. Don't do them. Don't rack the shotgun and don't growl. All right? Okay, this next bit is has been inspired by Caden, who sent me an email from Vancouver. And she says that she's been applying the real-life actor technique to film and TV, and she seems to have been having success with it. But that when she does musical theater, she falls back into that old style of acting. And she says she always gets trapped in her head because she says she immediately thinks about, in quotes, using the music, incorporating movement, and splitting focus. She says these are all buzz phrases that her teachers in theater school have indoctrinated her with, which I think are fascinating because I can only imagine what these things mean. But, you know, people make up these great phrases that, I mean, I understand English, so I get it. Use the music. Well, okay, I don't know what that is. Incorporating movement. Yeah, I guess you are doing one thing and then you move as well. And then splitting focus, which always feels dangerous to me, but there you have it. And she says, as a result, the song is never authentic, and I always try to save it by being entertaining. Does your technique still apply to singing a song in a musical? I would love to hear your perspective on this. Well, here it comes, Caden. Here's what I think. You know, at the end of the day, there isn't tons real about what it is we do. I mean, if we're really lucky, sometimes we work in an environment where just the way things are set up, even looking past your actor, there's an actual wall and a window. Maybe you're on location and maybe the crew's on the other end of things. And so you're seeing a reality and I don't see any real technical equipment necessarily that is distracting me. And we can be having a conversation about something that's just present day. It's not futuristic or historic. And we can be in clothes that we would normally wear and be chit-chatting away. And yeah, you know, it can kind of feel like for moments at a time, well, hell, it's a lot easier to kind of fall into the groove here of reality than, say, for instance, staring at a tennis ball for sightline and screaming because the Tyrannosaurus Rex is about to rip your head off. Those are two very different different situations yet, we would hope, fingers crossed, that we would be able to experience all of these things. So what is real about a tennis ball being suspended for a sight line of where the Tyrannosaurus Rex's mouth is, or where the Tyrannosaurus Rex is? Well, nothing, of course, but you know, this is what we signed up for. So what am I saying? Well, the way that I think that the real life actor approach may help you is in a basic philosophy. That is, there is a preciousness about most approaches, methods, schools of thought, you know. It can get to a point where it's almost a religion, you know, everything's so serious, you know, like with preparation, all sorts of stuff. Not that I think that one, you know, that it's a parlor trick acting or that it's just, you know, it should always be sleight of hand. No, I think there is a certain investment we make as people in our characters or with our thoughts or with our emotion. And, you know, this stuff's for real. I mean, when you're dropping the hammer and you're really hooking up and it's authentic in a scene, then for all intents and purposes, you know, we should be kind of watching the thing unfold like it's really happening between action and cut. There is a commitment that I think is some serious stuff. This isn't just, horseplay, but sometimes it is. Sometimes all it is horseplay. Sometimes all it is just some silly thing we have to now accomplish. And we can't get precious about it. I mean, you're in a musical, you have to start moving a certain time, do-si-do your partner, whatever contrived to the music, absolutely on the beat, everything has to be done a certain way. There's no real improvisation here. I mean, you have to be there or the, you know, girl's going to fall on her back because you won't be there to catch her. So, of course, things have to be done, but all in the guise, I suppose, in a best case scenario, of it, you know, kind of blossoming in this organic way that we would be able to take something as contrived as a musical with its music and its choreography and add to it a sense of it is just unfolding in front of us. These people, yes, they're dancing and everything else, but by diggity, it seems like it's just completely impulsive that these people are singing this song right now because they feel it in their heart and they're dancing around because by diggity, they feel just like that dance looks. Yeah, I think that is what we would want in a best case scenario for sure. And in that sense, it falls right in line with certainly what would be one of our goals in the real-life actor method, and that would be for the audience to feel like what they're watching is being baked on the spot right in front of them. There is a basic aspect of this philosophy, which is, you know, you care more about the thing by caring less about it. So you kind of release your grip on trying to authentically or with whatever obligation you being a true artist has given yourself to accomplish this task at hand. You want to do it in the most righteous, correct, beautiful, artistic way, and you hold yourself to that. You see, that is really, really great. But it can also tend to get us to sit on our own shoulder and be our own worst critic and moan and complain every time something doesn't feel quite right or completely justified or spontaneous or real or whatever else you may be hoping for all the right reasons. You know, I was working with an actor today, and it's some futuristic thing. So, you know, references are made to made up planets or solar systems, and the references to food and what's going on and you know, what you would consider your riches. All of these words were silly and weird words. And, you know, being a very realistic actor, he was having problems with it because he just felt phony. He just saying all this dumb stuff. And it's not like we're sitting there like two detectives and we're chatting and it's kind of easy to fall into the groove. No, you're saying a bunch of corny ass stuff and you're trying to be blustery with it and really own it. And I made this comment. I said, you know, in this scene, you're basically a pirate. You're a pirate. It's make-believe. What? You're a larger-than-life character. That's what they want in this script. I guarantee you that's what they're looking for. They're looking for a larger-than-life pirate, but a good one. where we believe their largesse. We applaud it. We love it. You know, they own the words. They really, every bit of it, the vitality, the thrust with which they speak or counter someone else's claim. You know, on one hand, it's like, you know, what is that? But when you really just embrace it and do it for that thing of just committing and being the pirate, oh, you can make anything real. You can make anything real because, you know, what you're really doing first and foremost is accepting the fact that as the storyteller, you're supposed to play this part. And now's the time to really own its largesse, own its choreography and music, and not be preoccupied with whether or not every single thing is motivated for all the right reasons. Get on with it. And a 5, 6, 7, 8, let's go. Enjoy it. Embrace it. If you fall out for a moment, it doesn't matter. I'm telling you, when we get in these situations, we tend to watch ourselves way more like hawks with a thumb on the pulse of our character the entire time, ready to throw our hand up and say, I'm out. And it's that alone keeps you from where you want to be. You know, there are times when we're dealing with the sightline tennis ball or anything else that suddenly seems like maybe we're just a little too old to be playing these silly games, but it is our job. And so we embrace it. So, you know, when it's a 5, 6, 7, 8, you hit every mark you're supposed to hit, you're there, you do-si-do. And when it's time to sing, you know why your character sings the song. You know what's motivating it. You don't have to think about it. You don't have to live through it. Get on with it. Share it. Share it for all the right reasons. Don't sit there and try and stew in it and realize you're not in the stew. Now what do I do? This feels so phony. I hate this. Musicals are dumb. No, they're not. Only sometimes, but a lot of times they're not. Especially when people do it this way. Especially when everything just seems to come out of the right place. I think it's more apt to come out of the right place if you don't over-scrutinize it. If you don't, you know, worry about it or be concerned about every aspect of what's going on because, you know, it's showbiz. And we're supposed to be good at being able to live through all of these moments as authentically as we can, as consistently as we can, as you can. Just keep rolling back to it. Just keep rolling back to the impulse of the moment, the reality of what's going on, just keep rolling back to it, no matter what you're in the midst of. So in that sense, Caden, I think that it comes in mightily handy in the philosophical, don't be so precious, don't worry about it. Get the underlying idea of what's going on and sing it. Don't be overcritical of what you're doing. It's a musical. Enjoy it. Do it. Go for it. And listen, it may not be a light switch overnight for you, but I would go this way. I'd say, look, just continue to try and loosen in to the pirate play, to the fun, to the big-ass make-believe of it. And within that, be as authentic as you possibly can, but allow it to be authentic. Don't make it that way. It is because it is, because you're smart, you know what you're talking about, and you know what you're singing about. I think if you just enjoy yourself more and stop worrying about this little thing, I think you're already going to get more traction and that's going to lead to more. So why don't you try that? That's my advice there. All right. Well, that's what I have to say for this podcast. Thanks for listening. You have been listening to a Real Life Actor podcast. This is Jeff Seymour. Please remember to follow us on Podomatic or subscribe on iTunes. If you want to know anything else about the Real Life Actor approach, you can always go to reallifeactor.com. Thanks for listening.